Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Murder 123. This is Dr. John Stamey. We've got an exciting show tonight. We are here in the aftermath of the Lizard Man Festival, which was this weekend, and over 2,000 people watched, which was great. We were very excited about that. And now we move on to another bunch of exciting online festivals, and I think you will start enjoying them. They're a lot of fun, and you don't have to travel anywhere, and you still get the great same people talking and all that. So more on that very, very soon. So anyway, Tony Filosi, how are you doing
tonight? I'm doing great tonight, John. It is Monday. I'm excited about another great episode of Murder 123.
Well, I am too. This one's particularly difficult. This is a bad guy tonight. A really bad guy. Welcome, Ted Bundy. Everybody remembers Ted, I think. He had quite a reputation throughout the Midwest and the West Coast. So we will get right to it. And there was a lady named Eleanor Cowell, and she went by the name Louise. And she was unmarried, and she gave birth to a son named Ted. Now, we don't really know who the father was. It could have been an Air Force veteran named Lloyd Marshall, or it could have been a fella named Jack Worthington. Some people say the father, now believe it or not, Tony, could have been his grandfather, because she was not married. But anyway, because his birth certificate listed the father as unknown, his biological father is never really going to be confirmed. I'm afraid we're just not going to be able to do that. So in 1951, Louise met this man named Johnny Bundy, and even though Ted took his name, he really didn't like his stepfather. He kind of resented him for being uneducated and lower class. But Johnny and Louise had a pretty nice life together, and they had a couple of kids and all that good stuff. So, and I just got noticed that Robin and her family have a snake issue. It is a, how can I put it? It is a rattlesnake issue. So she will be here shortly. Rattlesnake, probably just as mean as Ted Bundy. So anyway, well, they have a 6-foot rattlesnake. I saw the darn thing when I was there this past weekend, and it's scary. I don't envy them in the least. So anyway, Louise, as we know, she was working as a secretary at the University of Puget Sound when she married Johnny, and Ted was actually accused of his crimes back in the 70s. She refused to believe the charges that were against Ted. And it was a very, very sad day for her. Bud was born in Burlington, Vermont in 1946 at a home for women who were not married. And he was always ashamed that he didn't have a father per se, and so it was just tough for him. So anyway, she brought her son to her parents in Philadelphia, and that's where they lived. Now, to hide the fact that he was illegitimate, he was raised as the adopted son of his grandparents, and was told that his mother was his sister. Eleanor moved with Johnny Bundy to Tacoma, Washington, a few years later, and married. That's where he was married to her, and believe it or not, they started building a family. From all appearances, Ted Bundy grew up as in a kind of a content working class family. He was actually very interested in horror at an early age. When he was 3 years old, he became fascinated by knives. He was shy, but really bright, and he did well in school, but not really well with his peers, you know, the kids he should have been friends with. He just didn't. But now, when he was a teenager, the darker side of his character started to emerge. He would get drunk as a teenager and walk around the neighborhood and look through windows, watch ladies under everything and anything else he could see. And he just didn't care about stealing things he wanted from other people. He would sneak into houses. At that time, a lot of people didn't lock money. Do you remember when you were a kid, maybe people didn't really always lock their doors because they trusted people?
Oh, absolutely. It was, not uncommon at all to leave your doors unlocked, and your, you know, outbuildings didn't have locks on them. It was a different time for sure.
It really was. I remember when we went to Myrtle Beach one time. We lived up in the mountains of North Carolina, and we left and we went to Myrtle Beach for 5 days and came back, and my mother and father realized they just had not locked the doors. Nothing was missing. Everything was fine. And I remember them saying, you know, we live in a wonderful town. People wouldn't dare think of robbing you. Well, I tell you what, it's not that way today. Anyway, Ted, he graduated from the University of Washington with a degree in psychology in 1972. And he'd been accepted to school in Utah, but he really never went there to school, to graduate school or anything. Now, while he was a student at the University of Washington, Ted fell in love with a wealthy, pretty young lady from California. She had everything that he wanted, money, class, and influence. He was really devastated when they broke up, and a lot of his later victims seemed to resemble his college girlfriend, attractive student with long, dark hair. That seems to be something that we find in a lot of these serial killers. Now, by the mid-70s, he transformed himself. He was really a lot more confident. He was active in social and political matters. He got a letter of recommendation from the Republican governor of Washington after working on his campaign, quite active in politics, it seems. And here we are, the first lady of Murder 123, Robin McRae. How are you and the snake doing tonight?
Oh, my gosh. I'm declaring war. The 6 foot, the 7 foot rattlesnake I haven't seen, but now there's a small snake of some kind. I can't tell what kind it is because it was over bothering the foster dog. So they're all running amok. It's breeding season. They're all running amok.
Well,
I had to head out and
put
stuff down to leave my dogs.
That's exactly right. You want to take care of those wonderful dogs that you have. They're really cool. So anyway, tonight we are talking about, as you saw, Ted Bundy. And gotten to the point, he's graduated from college. He did some work on the governor's political campaign. The governor wrote him a letter of recommendation to law school. And I mean, that was kind of a big deal. And to get back to where we were, because I'm missing my story. But anyway, he started, you know, while he was there at law school, it seems like he began his murder career around 74. And, you know, there were a lot of women in the Seattle area and nearby Oregon. They went missing. Stories circulated about some of the victims had last been seen in the company of a young, dark-haired looking man named Ted. He often lured his victims into his car, pretending to be injured and asking for help. Their kindness really proved to be the wrong thing for them. So anyway, in the fall of 74, Ted Bundy moved to Utah to attend law school, and women began disappearing as well. Following year, he was pulled over by the police. When they searched his car, they discovered a machete and burglary tools, a crowbar, a face mask, rope, and handcuffs. And he was arrested for possession of these tools, and the police began to link him to some of these more sinister crimes that they just didn't seem to have a suspect for. Anyway, in 75, then, he was arrested for the kidnapping of Carol Duranche, one of the few women that really escaped his clutches. He was convicted and received a 15-year jail sentence. Now, he was quite a card. He escaped from prison twice in 1977. First time, he was indicted on murder charges for the death of a young Colorado woman and decided to act as his own lawyer in the case. Now, here's what really happened. He was a smart guy, and he spent a lot of time studying the law because, you know, when you're in jail back then, you really could get access to a lot of to a lot of references and books. So he studied law, and attorney said that he was a pretty darn good lawyer. He acted as a lawyer, and so then when he was in the courthouse one day, he said, "I need to go to your law library." He went to the law library. They just let him go back in there, and they never thought that he would jump out the window and escape. So about 8 days later, they caught him. Now, in December, he escaped from custody again. He climbed out of a hole that he made in the ceiling of his cell. He dropped to about 30 pounds so he could fit through that small opening. And they didn't discover that he was gone for about 15 hours, giving him like a huge lead time. So it was just amazing. Now came, you know, that was just his warm-up. The big thing that made newspaper headlines all over the country was when he broke into Chi Omega House. He eventually made his way to Tallahassee, Florida. And in January of 78, he broke into the Chi Omega sorority house at Florida State University. He attacked four of the young girls there, killed two of them. On February the 9th, he kidnapped and murdered a 12-year-old girl named Kimberly Leach. And these crimes really marked the end of his murder pages because he was pulled over by the police that February and caught. Now, the most damning piece of evidence connected with him on two Chi Omega murders at Florida State University were bite marks on one of the bodies, which were a definitive match to Ted Bundy. I mean, you know, here he's making Pee Wee Gaskins look like an amateur here. So, but however, when he was on trial, Ted Bundy was a good-looking, charming man and very intelligent, and it really made him a little bit of a celebrity, a lot like Colonel Andrew North. So Bundy, he fought for his life, but he was convicted. He spent 9 years on death row. So in July 79, he was convicted for the two Chi Omega murders, given the death penalty twice. He received another death sentence in 1980 for the murder of that young 12-year-old girl, Kimberly Leach. He appealed, and he's trying to take his case as high as the Supreme Court, but he got turned down. He also offered information on some unsolved murder to avoid the electric chair in Florida, but he couldn't delay justice forever, and he was executed in the electric chair in 1989. Now, Elizabeth Klopfer, his girlfriend from 1969, he had had a 6-year relationship with her when they met at a Seattle bar. She was a single mom and had a young daughter and was struggling with alcoholism. Bundy had taken care of her, and she said he was warm and loving. I guess he just didn't. Maybe she didn't look like that first girlfriend of his that he liked so much. So anyway, it was back in 74 that she started to suspect Ted Bundy was a killer. She questioned him about his odd behavior, like keeping a meat cleaver in his desk and being charming to deflect her concerns. And she knew something was wrong. So she went to the police secretly with her suspicions about his involvement in several local murders, but they didn't believe he was a killer. They remained together, even though they really grew fairly distant, especially when Bundy moved to Olympia, Washington. In 1975, she went to the police again, this time with evidence that helped them arrest Bundy. He'd confessed to her over the phone from his prison cell that he'd tried to kill her, and her cousin, but it resisted his impulses when he felt sickness welling up inside of him. A year later, and that was a year later, she broke ties with Bundy for good and wrote a book all about her experiences. Now, at this point, what do we think? Tony, you've been doing some research on Bundy. We'll get back to his biography in a little bit. What do you think, and what do you know? What do you know?
Well, from the research I've done today, which watched some interviews and with Bundy the night before he died, and then some with his lawyer, and some a couple others, one with one of his victims that survived an attack. You know, as we've all shared with you, Bundy was a very evil, very, very evil individual. I think he also had a degree or had taken a lot of psychology classes in college. He was, as with other serial killers, he was a master manipulator. Like I said, he was a good-looking fellow. He could charm his women. He would appeal to their maternal instincts by, you know, acting like his arm was broken, or he had crutches, and he would, and he wasn't a very physically imposing person, so he put his victims, kind of like Jeffrey Dahmer, he put his victims at ease until it was too late. He also, oddly enough, as with Dahmer, he cut off their heads, a lot of their the victims' heads, and he would keep them, as well as small parts of their bodies. And as you said about the bite marks, I find that unusual. And really, I don't have a clue why he did them. But he would bite them so hard, some of them, he would, you know, especially on the breast, that he would almost sever the nipples. So this guy, he was about, with a lot of the other, all the serial killers that we've talked about, I think it's about insanity and domination. And I don't want to say that this guy was possessed, but some of the photographs that I saw of him, and it could just be a play of the light.
No, it's not.
It looks like his pupils are like snake eyes, and it could just be a play of the light. But now, I mean, this guy was evil incarnate. The his lawyer talked about how evil Bundy was. John Henry Brown, he said that Bundy confessed to many more murders than he was convicted of.
Maybe over 100.
Yes. And Brown said that he felt partially responsible for the murders in Florida, because that the cell that Bundy escaped out of in Colorado, we lost all the weight to where he could get out the hole in the ceiling of the cell. He had petitioned for better living conditions for Bundy, and he was moved to that cell that he escaped out of. So,
well, you know, you can't beat yourself over the head for something like that. I mean, how do you know that he's going to carve a hole and get out of it, you know?
Right. And then he also talks about that whenever Bundy was caught in Florida, that they didn't know who he was for one or two days. It was for some other way lesser crime, and they would probably release him in two or three days. And he said his biggest dilemma in his career was, I think, Rosebud or Rosenbaum. He called him from Florida with using an alias, and which he didn't turn him in, which I guess with the lawyer client privilege that he felt conflicted. But I probably would have ratted him out, because he's a killer and he's gonna kill again. So it's not like that, and I don't know, I don't see how you could be conflicted about stalking murders. But that was John Henry Brown's, and he didn't tell. They just figured it out on their own of who Ted Bundy was. But I guess with all that being said, Ted Bundy is the serial killer's killer. That's what he was 110% about, was stalking his victims, murdering his victims, and he was very good at it, very, very good at it. His victims went all the way across the board. He claims to have killed one man and upward of 90 females. So let's just cut that in half. Let's just say Bundy's, inflating his numbers. So still, he killed 40-odd women, and they would range in age from 12 years old. I don't know what the oldest one was, but we'll say in their 30s or so. So, he didn't. His only pattern was they were females, and they didn't meet a specific type. There wasn't a specific body type, a specific age group. It was just, with him, all about the murder and control of his victims.
Yeah, but here's something I don't understand. With most of these serial, like Bundy was not known as a thief or a robber. He was known as a serial killer. And where did he get the money to keep going all over the place, and money to rent a place and live and everything? I don't get this with most of these folks. I mean, we know Pee Wee Haskins, he was a common thief, and he stole from stores. And, down at Pawley's Island, where he was for a while, there was no police there. There was actually no police department there. Now there's one, and they have two cops. Now, come on. Well, where do these guys get their money?
I don't know. That's a really good question.
You see, and that's what I never can understand. I'll say that with coronavirus, and I have lost a business because of coronavirus, and I'm honest, and I do, at least I think I am, and sometimes you do everything you can to pay your bills, and that takes all your time. So, it's like, what is going on here with these folks? Pee Wee Gaskins is the only one that I know. Now, we do know that, what's his name, and you mentioned it up in Chicago, Tony? Jeffrey Dahmer. He kept trying to get jobs. He kept trying to work at the Merchant Marines and everything. He was actually a licensed seaman and everything. He was always trying to get a job, or his sister was giving him money, and he could live in a flop house or whatever. But it's amazing to me. It's like is his mom sending him money? Golly. Anyway, that's just kind of my take on it. Robin, so far, what do you think about Ted?
Well, I'm a little at a disadvantage because I got in here late, but what I have been able to pick up is, and I think Tony is still on the market. It's not even funny, but it's not surprising because he usually is. But this guy, I'm not so much going to say it's demonic, but he had another being inside of him. This is a guy that was already evil to the core, which we all know that work with the paranormal stuff. If you're that kind of energy, it draws more. And I think it did in this case. And I think not only was he evil to the core in his own right, but he also was possessed by something. And so you combine those two, and you have an evil that's unstoppable and unimaginable. Now, I thought it was very weird, and I don't know much about this part of it because that was all that was there, but that last girl that he was with, or not the last one, but the one before that, and he told her, "I did try to kill you. I'm just as shocked that she's even alive." Like, when he tried to kill somebody, they died.
Yes.
You know, I don't think he was inaccurate very often. So I would love to know more about that, on how this woman managed to stay alive. But I absolutely believe that Tony is once again dead right. I will back that to the hill, because every read that I've done on this guy, there's him there and there's something else inside of him.
There's definitely something else going on with him, Robin. Because, and I don't say that a whole lot, but you know, just the eyes.
I keep getting it's reptilian.
I mean, I don't want to really, you know, because I'm more of a fact based.
Right, right.
But I'm telling you, and I will screenshot one of the photos and send you guys. And I had Jenny come in. And I said, "Hey, look," when I was doing research, I said, "Look at this guy. What do you see?" She says, his eyes. And
right.
Definitely were slits. And I'm not talking about squinty slits. I'm talking about pupils. And this dude, there was something else, something pushing him besides just being insane. Because he, like I said, you know, his MO was just across the board. It wasn't. He was actually caught by accident pretty well. I mean, his girlfriend hadn't turned him in, and he hadn't messed up in Florida. Ted Bundy still could be killing today. Now, how does he pull that off? You know.
Well, number one, if he's mixed with what I think he is, that would explain a lot. Because if he's mixed with them, he's going to have some of these paranormal abilities that they had. But this is a guy that was so evil that that's the reason he was able to have something consume him like that. So you're talking about, even though he's got something possessed, that doesn't exonerate him from his portion of it, because he was already evil.
He had to welcome it in. He enjoyed his work, so to speak.
So he was already like that, but I guess the best way to explain it is to have a huge bonfire and then go pour gas on it.
It was a force,
what's gonna
a force
happen?
Multiplier. A force multiplier.
Exactly, and that's exactly what it did.
Yeah. So, I mean, this guy, like I said, the MO wasn't either by design or he just couldn't control himself. I mean, most...
I don't think he ever really, I think he could control it to a degree, but then it would just take over. And, you know, like I said, I'm really curious as to what went on with that one woman, how she survived it, because it's so unlike him. And I'm really curious, because I'd like to see what was different about that scenario that he stopped. You know, he says in there that he stopped, you know, that he felt like he wanted to kill her because, you know, he was, all of it was building up and this type of thing. And that's all true, but he did stop. What was different about that case above the other one? Because and I both know.
Robin, I might can shed some light on that.
Okay.
You see, there were three women that he ended up not killing, and they escaped. Do you think possibly she was like him, and maybe she was reptilian as well?
Oh, it's very possible.
I know, Tony, you just think this is crazy, and everybody can call me David Icke. Call me David, okay? Nobody. Oh, Tony, thank you. I was hoping somebody would laugh at that statement. But, you know, I mean, you don't know. I mean, I'm pretty,
no,
I don't know, a little convinced on David Icke most of the time. I don't think he's that dumb. I think he's a pretty smart guy.
Well, I had I'm sorry. I had what looked to be a human, but had reptilian in it, and I could tell by the eyes, and also the energy that came from him, come after me. All right? And I had a friend with me that witnessed the whole thing. We watched this thing walk through a solid wall into our hotel room. She watched it grab me by the leg and try to jerk me off the bed almost over to the wall. You know, it's not something that, you know, I was there by myself and I'm just talking. Somebody was with me and witnesses. He looked perfectly normal, but as soon as I saw him and he locked eyes on me, I knew. I just knew. And it was the worst feeling. And so we went and got a hotel room and stayed. And every time we turned, he was walking, he followed us. He ended up at the hotel room. But the thing of it is, you know, if you, like in Bundy's case, he was already a horrible, horrible human being. Obviously, he had mental issues. Obviously, he wasn't happy as a child. You know, he didn't really care for his stepdad. There's probably a million and one reasons. There's probably millions of people that have had millions of reasons that they could throw back on and say, well, this is why I didn't turn out good, but yet they did turn out good. So this was even more deep-seated. Yeah, and this was more deep-seated than, you know, blaming it on somebody, because that's just absolutely insane. When you get to the level that he was. But when you get to that level, you create this vessel of dark energy. And it's like, go outside and pour honey on a log and the ants will come, you know, and it's the same thing. And so whatever evil he was, regardless of the reasons, these things look for that, they tap into it. And if you aren't just getting one that I call a bottom feeder, because that's all they do is they feed on it, occasionally you're going to get one like these reptilians. They're all for you being bad. They're all for you killing people, because that's what they want done anyway. And they just hijack their body. So now you've got the evil from the reptilians and you've got the evil from what he is, which creates the Ted Bundy effect.
What one reason he may not kill his girlfriend was, you know, she had a young daughter, is he needed them as cover. He's really intelligent, you know, and so I think that he probably wanted to kill her, but he knew that he needed them as a cover, because it made him seem more normal. And so,
but that means
so
that shows that, the intelligence that's there.
Yes, I'm super. He was a very, very intelligent fellow. Watching the interviews, he had the only remorse that he had was really getting caught, because he started trying, you know, blame porn he would go into the grocery stores and they had the big magazine racks pharmacies, and he would look at soft for porn when he was, you know, 13, 14. And he said, and they would be driving along, and his buddies on these back roads where he was raised at, and they would see random dumps, and they would go, you know, they would find bondage porn. And so he was just really BS, and I mean, just was my opinion from as far as that part. I don't think he regretted. The only thing he regretted was getting caught. He's definitely insane. Probably.
Oh yeah.
More so than you have to be insane to do what they do. But I think it was alluded to that he also ate small pieces of his victims, and he had the same response as what Dahmer did. You know, I wanted to make them part of me. I wanted to keep them. I wanted to make them part of me. And the keeping of the skulls and some other things, the trophies. He wanted to relive it over and over and over. And, you know, instead of, I guess keeping a skull or two and just him reliving that and not the murders not coming to fruition, he was going to kill as many as he could because he enjoyed it.
Yeah,
because that
hijacked him wants that feeling, that kind of darkness, and they feed on it. So the more he does it, the more they're going to provoke him to do it. And he was bad enough on his own.
Yes, and he talked about, as the rest of them did, that he couldn't control the urges. And I know this is kind of veering off the direction we're going, but I wonder if I don't guess they did after they fried him, examined his brain. And I wonder if these serial killers, do they look at their brains to see if there's any abnormalities? Is there something we could look at? Because there's a common thread with a lot of these people. They keep trophies. They have no remorse, no pity. People are objects, and they look at the human race as a way to fulfill with the evil they do on the human race is a way to fulfill themselves, their needs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just kind of, wondering if there's any autopsies been, I'm sure there have been, but if there is a common abnormality, that's the investigator part coming out in me where I want to, okay, was there any abnormalities? Are they similar? Did they run tests on, what kind of, were there elevated levels of certain types of endorphins or anything?
Yeah.
But maybe that would explain them being more of a willing conduit for whatever's out there, because this, no normal person, you might do a crime of passion or something, somebody's threatening your family or there's something, you can't get away from. Yeah, you may harm another human being, but it's not something you get up every morning and go, well, I believe I'm going to go kidnap some co-eds and cut their heads off. Then he would have sex with the corpses. And he would
until they were
corpses.
Too putrid,
yes,
for him to do it. Yes.
Yes. So, definitely, I don't think there's any really figuring out why. Did he accept that he was insane? Possibly, I don't throw around the word possession lightly, but if there was ever one that was possessed, it was Ted Bundy.
It
was Jerry
Jeff. I don't say that very often either, but definitely that's what was going on with him. Yeah, but it was almost like an equal possession. I mean, this thing would take over, but all it did was enhance what was already there.
Yeah, like the force multiplier, because, like I said, if it hadn't been for his girlfriend turning him in and
mm-hmm.
him making a mistake in Florida, Ted Bundy wouldn't have been caught. Not for a long, long, long time, because he made when DNA testing and stuff came into its own. But, just think about that.
Yeah.
Bundy didn't get caught because of good police work. He got caught because his girlfriend turned him in, and he was picked up for another crime. They figured out who he was.
Didn't the cops picked him up? They started finding things in his car. And the first time that they did, he was so cool, calm, and collected, they just let him go. And it was the second time, later that same day, that he was picked up and they finally did something with him. It's kind of like Jeffrey Dahmer in that poor kid from Lies when he escapes and goes downstairs. He's naked. He goes out in the road. These two nice girls find him, and they call the cops. and the cops just wouldn't believe them that something was wrong. And,
yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, why won't cops, you know, I think that has changed now, especially, you know, in our culture. But back in the day, I mean, you know, you had to see somebody almost killing someone for a woman to complain to a policeman to get something done, and that's the way it was.
Yeah.
It really, really was. So, anyway, sad. Very sad.
Bundy's lawyer, Bundy's lawyer says he, you know, they're in a meeting, and Bundy looks at him and says, you know, John Henry Brown, I want to be a good person, but I just can't. So he knew.
He knew, and I'm sure he knew it was there.
Yeah. So he accepted. I mean, he just rolled with it, you know. I think, again, I think that the only thing that, you know, in his last days before they executed him, you know, he teared up and cried. And I think that the shot, I don't think that he ever believed that it would get to that point, that he would get life, he would escape again. And I think that he was so good at what he did that he toyed with law enforcement. That,
yeah.
You know, you're not going to leave that kind of, yeah, it was a game. You're not going to leave that stuff, you know. I mean, if I had committed a crime, I'm not going to leave the stuff in my trunk or in my back seat of my car.
Yeah.
For anybody to find, you know, because more than likely, it was laying right in the. Do you know where that the rope and all that was found, John? Was it in the back seat or?
It was in his trunk.
So,
it was in his trunk, if I'm not mistaken.
I wonder why they searched his car. Because he...
It was the fact that he looked really rough. He'd been up for several days, and he looked just rough as a cob. And so when you get somebody like that, you're probably going to search their car.
His appearance, okay. He wasn't looking his usual college...
Dapper
Yeah. And that's what some of the females said, that or the one that survived, that he picked her up. She's waiting on a bus to take her home after class, and that I think maybe this was in Utah, maybe. And he got she got in the car with him. He had offered her a ride, and the first thing she noticed was the door handle gone from the passenger side, and that she says she got in with him. He said he looked like he was a college student, and that's what he represented himself as. And so I think that if he had been looking like that, I would say the police never would have searched his car.
Yeah.
But if he was looking, had been up for several days, I'm sure they thought maybe drugs were involved, and they were just, you know, checking things out, and then stumbled upon the murder paraphernalia.
Yeah. Now, you're both good friends of mine as well as co-hosts on this show. I want to ask the two of you a question. You know what I look like. You know how I present myself. Now, if I'm riding around in a black 2010 Pontiac GT with the numbers 13 on the side panels of my car and a large vinyl lizard man on the hood, when I'm in the lizard man mobile, which is actually going to be around here in about 3 months, I'm talking about getting that thing done so we can help raise some money for charity. Do you think if I'm riding around with my lizard man mobile, do you think I would get stopped?
Would you get stopped?
Would I get stopped by the cops riding around with my lizard man mobile?
You know, nothing would surprise me anymore.
This is all for real.
I think they would give you a second look, and then
yeah, but I don't know that they'd stop you if you were breaking the law.
But
well,
if
I was just wondering what you thought, Robin. Yeah, Robin, that caught you off guard, didn't it?
Well, yeah, that was funny.
Well, yeah, that's what happens when you spend all weekend working with Lizard Man Festival.
Yeah,
you start
exactly.
trying to determine who Lizard Man can help raise money for and how to help kids, and that's probably through literacy. And so we came up with the idea of the Lizard Man Mobile. So I can go ahead and say it now because trademark application's in, the website's been purchased, so, you know, what more can I say? Yeah, okay, good. I guess. So Tony, do you think they would stop me if I was just riding along in my Lizard Man Mobile?
I don't think they would stop you. I think they would give you a second look, and if you weren't weaving or doing anything strange, they would just, you know, say, well,
they would be. They would be glad to not have to pull me over?
I would say so. I would say
okay.
So.
All right. Well. Okay. Well, I'll go back. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with stirring the pot here, especially with the truth. Right, Robin?
Exactly. Yeah, I tried to tell the truth at the Lizard Man conference, and they shut me down. So.
Oh, not till the end, so that's okay.
And
won't
Bundy,
be the last time.
Bundy was, I think, as with the rest of the serial killers, pretty well nondescript. Which helped him to avoid detection. But I mean, how do you kill that many people and nobody suspects you except, I mean, his girlfriend? If he had been, but again, I think he kept her around. He may have liked her, you know, but. As much as a serial killer can like somebody. But I think she was more of a cover because that made you look normal with a girlfriend that had a child. So it could kind of look like a pseudo family, you know?
Family, yeah.
Yeah.
But how do you kill that many people and not get caught? I mean, I'm sure he had close calls or people, just random people driving by. But how do you do that? I mean, 40 people.
That's amazing to me.
Well, if you remember, the Zodiac Killer killed a lot of people. And he did his damnedest to try to tell everyone who he was. And he even admitted his name at one point. What can I say? It is very odd. It's very odd that people. Some people can just get away with murder. No pun intended. They can get away with murder. I guarantee if any of the three of us breathed wrong that we'd get caught.
Oh yeah. But the what do you guys think about the similarities with the cutting off of the heads? What do you think the decapitation in their mind?
I think they do it because they don't want to see the look in their eyes. They just remove the whole head.
Can't bear to look at them?
Well, yeah, they don't want to see their face. Like, it's one thing to do it and get that thrill from it when they're torturing them and they're killing them, but then once they're dead, I keep getting they don't want to look at their face. They don't want to have to look at the face.
But why do they keep their skulls?
Yeah, I have no idea. Maybe it's a souvenir.
Yeah, like a trophy,
to
relive the event.
Yeah.
But
I mean, listen, if you come to Myrtle Beach, you can go to the Gay Dolphin and you can get you a souvenir all you want. But not with a murder. Oh gosh.
Well,
okay.
But with Bundy, it just, he was just so, you know, I don't want to give him props or anything because he was just so evil, you know, but he was just so damn good at it.
Yeah.
And the bodies and bodies and bodies have never been found. And then as a final deal, whenever he was executed, they cremated him and spread his ashes.
Yep.
In Washington, was it?
Over the Catskills.
Where some of his victims were found, and they suspected more were buried that weren't found.
Yeah.
So was that his way of still controlling everything around him at his last?
Well, if you look at the similarities between Bundy and Jeffrey Dahmer, I mean, and I think, Tony, you were the one that brought this up. Jeffrey Dahmer was hanging out at his at Meemaw's house. He was dismembering a boy. I mean, blood had to be going all over the place. Now,
right.
If you think about it, you know, so you, Ted Bundy, isn't blood going to be going all over the place?
There should be, because he would bludgeon these folks. I mean, it wasn't like he used chloroform or anything and then, you know, put a bag over, you know, a plastic bag over their head and smothered them. He bludgeoned them.
So you got blood all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, and it had to be. I mean, in the car, and maybe that's how the girlfriend become, you know, how she started suspecting him is, I mean, how are you going to clean that up? I mean, you dispose of so many bodies, man, because you got to get them in the car. I mean, he had them in the car, and most of them he would knock out or start the process in the car. You know, bludgeon them and finish them off by strangling them. So, you know, there had to be blood stains, fatter,
evidence,
hair, you know, and then some of them probably had to fight him, you know, out of all the 40 people or so. I mean, I think he admitted to, he said he killed up to 100, but you know, let's cut that in half and say killed, and then a little more and say killed 40. Some of them had to put up a fight, and he had to have some sort of defensive wounds when he's strangling these folks.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be some sort of scratches on him. You know, some sort, and how's, you know, maybe that's another thing that tipped his girlfriend off. But I think we go back, if we look at the girlfriend that turned him in, and his wife. Didn't she become his wife, or was that another?
Another lady that he married in front of the judge. He said, "I want you to marry me." And judge, do you approve? And he said yes. The lady said yes. And she was married to him because that was the law in Florida at that time.
And then was she the one that had his daughter? That was the one that had his
Rose,
daughter.
That is correct.
Yes. Okay. So the girlfriend before the one he married, you know that she had to notice these scratches or wounds on him. So do we have another case like with Dahmer, with his father and his grandmother on his father's side, knowing there's something really seriously screwed up about this dude, but turn the other way or help him cover it up and you know, not necessarily participate in the murder, but you know, help him along by not turning him in. His girlfriend turned him in, but I think her conscience got the best of her. I think she knew. You couldn't kill that many people.
And I think, too, she was probably so scared that,
yeah,
you know, she wanted some kind of security.
And I think that she got afraid, like what you say, Robin, and that's why she started trying to turn him in. I think it took two times for them to.
That's
take
correct.
Serious.
They did not believe her the first time.
So you know, so she. I think she was afraid. She knew what he was doing. You know, the guy had the meat cleaver in his desk. He comes and goes at odd hours. You know, he probably has some defensive wounds on him. I mean, how many times times can you bump your head or you scratch yourself up doing whatever, you know, that he made up, you know. So she's probably, you know, she's ridden in the car. She's probably seen some of the evidence. So I think that she knew, and that that's why she turned him in, because she was afraid. She, you know, and she probably,
you know, there's
got
some,
out
there's,
her,
and there's another thing that we haven't mentioned. Blood stains clothes terribly.
Yes.
You can't, it's hard to get out, isn't it? Last time I checked.
Yes.
And
it was going to soak through, more than likely soak through to the skin. And so, you know, what's he going to do with the clothes? I mean, she's going to notice if he takes a change of clothes out with him and then comes back in and the clothes are changed. Or if he doesn't change, that he's had blood on his clothes and she does the washing. And then, you know, he's going to have a little on him. So, you know, she's had to pick up on those things. I'm thinking that, especially long-term serial killers like this that have some sort of family relationship with someone, that at some point early on, they suspect that. And then they look the other way until, you know, they get afraid. In Dahmer's case, when his dad just quit having anything to do with him and just let him live in the house. But with Bundy, as we progress with the show, do we look at things like that too? Is it, okay, who's their close confidants? Who are they living with? What are they doing? This person had to know, you know, because it's all adding up, guys, that these fellas, to get away with long-term murder like that, somebody might not necessarily be covering for them, like helping them dispose of the bodies, but they're not turning them in either. And it's like with Dahmer, and you cut up all those folks in your bedroom or in the garage. You know, you got 1.2 to 1.5 gallons of blood. You know what I mean? It's like we talked before. It would be like taking the top off of a gallon of paint and just slinging it all over the floor. I think a lot of these people just they had to know. And I think this is peeling a layer off of successful serial killers, that somebody close to them knows or suspects what they're doing. H.H. Holmes.
I was getting ready to say, though, H.H. Holmes has got had the one advantage that he had the vat of acid. And,
yes,
you know, he didn't, and he could get rid of everything and nobody would ever know. He really did.
But his crony that he had helping him that thought he was going to be spared, so to speak, he ended up killing him. But he had help. You know, he had somebody that knew and that helped him with his task. But I think with Dahmer and Bundy, that I don't think any of the family members participated that we know of. With Dahmer, I'm not so sure, because there was way too much that went on. And I know you guys probably watched the interviews with Dahmer and his dad. And then when they start fighting over a box with a decapitated head and a mummified head and genitalia in it from one of his victims, you know, his dad just didn't randomly say, "Well, hey, Jeffrey, that sure is an ugly box on the table, son. You need to get rid of that." You know, he knew there was something in there.
Dads just know, don't they?
That one did. That one did. And I think that with Dahmer, that his girlfriend knew. Because he was with her, what, for 6 years?
Yeah.
How many murders did he commit in 6 years? A bunch, I would say.
Who knows? Just who knows?
She couldn't help but being clued in.
That is very, very true. And I guess when you look at the paranormal aspect of things, it seems like there's a reason to say that something was going on in the personality and the abilities of Ted Bundy. You know, if you all think David Icke and reptilians are stupid, you better think again. Tony's going to fire us up a picture of Jeffrey Dahmer with lizard-like eyes.
I'll screenshot it. I mean, it could be the lighting. It could be, I'll let y'all make up your own mind. But he was, the way that he's looking, he's with a, I don't know who he's with, maybe it's his old girlfriend, or it's with a female. And he absolutely, it's just, when you see it, you'll immediately notice what I'm talking about. Just his eye, no feeling, nothing there. He's smiling, but his eyes sure aren't off.
Yeah.
Well, we can't take a look at that, and I'll certainly post that up on Facebook as soon as I get a copy of it. I mean, it just sounds so dastardly. So there are a lot of, how can I put it? There are just a lot of. When you step back like we have and give a number of years to kind of sit and marinate, there are a lot of things that we can see that maybe other people might have been just too close to it. It was a murder case, and they got the murderer. It was solved, and go on to the next case. I mean, that's what they have to do, isn't it, Tony?
Yes. Yes.
Once you solved it, you solved it.
So I'll find that
please do
video I was watching, and I'll pull a screenshot of it off.
Well, that's good. All right, so I think I'd like to go around the table here with our fantastic crew. I will say that on behalf of our other two panelists, first of all, Rob Kellum has had a death in the family, and he is busy with that. And Devin Tate had such. I worked him so hard this weekend at the Lizard Man Festival, and he actually produced a documentary, which you can go see. Go to Devin Tate, T-A-I-T, on Facebook, and you can see that documentary. Absolutely wonderful on the lizard people of Los Angeles. But so we'll go around the table for final. We'll capture some final thoughts. We'll start with the first lady of Murder 123. Robin?
Okay, you want thoughts on Ted Bundy?
Final thoughts.
I honestly think that he had a lot of mental issues, that there was something mentally not there, even as a small child. I think he had a lot of mental illness there. But I also think he had this inbred thing in him where he was just evil. You know, not all evil is demonic. He was never demonic. He was just down and out evil. And I think that he did. I have to agree with Tony again. You know, something took hold of him, and I believe that it was reptilian. And it's almost like once those two were together, they formed this one person. He never fought having that thing inside of him, and I believe that he knew it was in there. I don't think he knew how to get rid of it, but I think he knew it was there. And because he was already bad, it was just like, okay, this will work. And you get the two of them together, and they're lethal.
Lethal times,
you know?
At least 50, which is
right. Yeah, exactly.
How horrible. All right, so final thoughts. There was a second entity around him that could meld with him, and they were just, they couldn't be any more evil, correct?
Right.
Great. Tony, what are your final thoughts on Ted Bundy?
Ted Bundy was an extremely intelligent individual.
Yeah.
I think
very.
That he went to law school for a little bit. I think that's what he said, you know, but he took psychology also. I think that he did that not necessarily because he wanted to be a lawyer, but because he wanted to figure out better ways to, to get his victim's guard down with the psychology and the laws. He just, he said, okay, if I get caught or this happens, or they have to meet this threshold if they're going to look at anything I'm doing. I think everything he did, it was a calculated thing. I don't think that his victims were met any certain type of criteria, except they were, females, and he wanted to kill them. Because, like we said before, he went as young as 12 years old. I mean, how you bludgeon and rape and murder a 12-year-old screaming for their, she begged for her life unless he had already knocked her out. I just think he was just he's very intelligent, very unassuming, and very, very, very evil. I mean, that's all you can say about Bundy.
I agree with you. And now my final comment, and I guess it's because I have to be the finance guy. Where did the money come from for him to live on to do this, number one? Where did the money come from for him to buy? He had to buy a lot of new clothes, whether he went to Walmart or wherever. I mean, you get bloodstains on them. I think if I remember correctly, I had a cut, and it was like Clorox and baking soda back in the day. It was a lot to get rid of, and they never did look right. Especially if it was light colored clothing. I mean, I don't know if any of you remember that, but it's just hard to get blood out of something and have it look good. And it's like, so where did the money come from? Where did the car come? I mean, again, he had to have a car to go do all this. Where did it go? And that's my take on things. Where did all the funding come from? And who wasn't looking? It's like the landlord goes to Jeffrey Dahmer's house, says this foul smell. I mean, let's face it, you notice a foul smell that has an organic tint to it. You are gonna do something. Probably, if you're smart, you'll leave and come back to the cops and let them explore it, and then if nothing's wrong, nothing's wrong. So, I mean, there's so much. Oh, and even Dahmer's, the 12 times he got caught propositioning men in the bathhouse. I mean, can't somebody see that something's very, very wrong here? And there might be something else going on. I mean, I guess it goes to show that people really don't care. They don't think, well, what am I being presented with? Does anybody agree with me? People are so either clueless or they don't want to get involved. I mean, maybe I'm too involved.
That's true.
I think it's both.
I mean,
because he's so unassuming, people like that, you just say, there's no way they would do that. No way. And you second guess yourself instead of, looking at the evidence. So, I mean, I think that's a purposeful ploy with these guys is to look, as unassuming as they can, as harmless as they can.
I guess they're not running the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, are they, Robin?
No.
No, they're not. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, I think we have thoroughly sliced and diced, just like a Ronco product, the chop away or the steam away or whatever. We have sliced and diced Dahmer 2 weeks ago. We have sliced and diced Ted Bundy. We've got more people to slice and dice as we just kind of look at this, stepping back. And I've spoken with some people about the research and commentary that we had with Chris Benoit. And they said, golly, I wonder why we never heard anything like that. I said, well, I don't know, but, you know, it's just amazing that people are so desensitized that they won't think when something really looks wrong. I guess, Robin, you're the safety police. You're going to look into it. Me, I'm just a snoop. I'll look into it. Tony, being trained in the matters of the courthouse and some law enforcement, you know if something doesn't seem right, you're gonna stick your nose in it, right?
Oh yeah.
As he should.
Exactly as he should. Well, guys, it has.
We
been,
all need to question things more. We go through our lives blindly, like we're being led around by the nose. We need to question everything. We have been lied to for decades on every level, and we just have been like sheep. We just do what we're told. We believe what we're told to believe, and there's no truth or validity in anything.
Well, that is right, and it leads us to – pardon, Tony?
I found the photo, if I can – screenshot it. Let's see. There we go. And I'll shoot it to you just real quick.
Thank you. Are you gonna messenger it or?
Yeah. Messenger.
No one would have ever thought that messenger would be a verb.
It could be just the way the light's hitting his eyes, but just see what you guys think about it.
All right. So that's what I like about our shows. We can go ahead and get it figured out with Brady Hicks. Brady was thrilled Thursday night on Scarycast. Spoke with him today. He was still thrilled. How Robin kept seeing all kinds of ghosts and mysterious things in his great pictures. Okay, it looks like my goodness, it looks like this just came through, and I'll have it fired up.
I'm sending you one too. I'm sending you a copy too. Right?
Okay, great.
Okay, so now I'm. Oh my goodness, he's got.
And it just struck me as odd.
That guy has something inside of him, hands down.
Look, do you see how?
Not even joking.
I mean, it looks like the light. I can't tell if it's the light or just his. See how his pupils.
No,
look?
I'm telling you that there is literally something in there with him.
And then,
but I think, but I get the impression that Ted Bundy liked it. Like, he didn't try to fight it. He went with it. He embraced it. That was part of the reason he was so bad.
But
that look right there is just not even human. Is it, Robin?
Yes. No, it's not.
Yeah, I'll let y'all make the call on that. But now, I mean, I just thought it was a really unusual photograph. So it just jumped out, and you know, it could be the lighting, but it absolutely looks, his pupils look wild. It look weird to me.
They certainly do. And I'm going to put this up right now on Facebook. You'll have it in about seconds. And take a look at Murder123 on Facebook, and it will be the last post, and it will be called Reptilian Ted. And that girl she looks just like that first girlfriend, so what more can you say? Really, can you say? We will do this, and then everybody can see exactly what Tony's talking about. And I think he did a great job on finding this.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like I said, you know, just watching the video and this photo popped up, and I said, "Man, that's just odd." you know, some of them, their eyes will be like bugged out, be dilated, and things like that. You know, some of those serial killers and nefarious characters. But, you know, like I said, it could be a play of the light, but it just struck me as odd the way that his pupils looked in that photograph.
Yeah, and comparing, I mean, you know, when you talk about looking crazy, like Charles Manson, always bug eye,
yeah,
and all that.
Yeah, yeah. And but I'll tell you, I mean, we'll switch gears to a paranormal thing. I think I've told the story before. One time, I absolutely, this person was, they weren't a killer or nothing. It was a female, but they were really, really evil. And we were standing under, and the lighting was really good, you know, standing under a street light. And I was going to church at the time. And she was trying to talk me into, I dated her at one time. And she was trying to say, hey, you know, talk me back into, reel me back in, I guess. And I'm sitting there looking at her. And it's like something goes in and out of focus, you know, just slightly. And full-on reptilian features with needle-like teeth. And I know that sounds crazy, but I'm just telling you what I saw. And I've seen that twice. I've seen people's eyes change color and them go completely black, too. But, you know, it's not like on a regular basis, but I mean, I've seen some strange stuff, as I know you guys have too. But I mean, this chick went full. I mean, it's just like she went slightly out of focus, and I could see her for what she was, for lack of a better thing, you know. And I mean, that's not, you know, it's one of them believe it or not things. I mean, man, I tell you what I thought. It was, you know, I held my ground. I didn't do anything, you know. My first instinct was to run like a rabbit. And I said, no, I'm gonna stay on my ground. You know, I'm going to stay right here. And I just kept looking. And it smiled at me. I mean, I know that sounds nutty, and that's more of a paranormal thing than a murder 1-2-3 thing. But I'm just telling you that person was so evil. And they embraced it because they were, I guess you could put it, to put it in a perspective, a gold digger. It was what you would call it, a gold digger, because she always went after the guys with money and didn't care what she done, and that's what she lived for. She just, and she had turned herself over to that. She knew what she did was wrong. But it was the greed that possessed her. And then something, I mean, I think something got a hold of her, because she had no remorse, no pity, no nothing, as long as she got what she wanted, which was the fancy cars and the cash and the trips and, you know, didn't care what the collateral damage was.
Yep. Well, everybody can certainly go to Murder123 on Facebook, and you can check out that picture of Ted. It says, Reptilian Ted Bundy, ? Check out those eyes. And I have tagged Tony and Robin and Devin, who's taking the night off, as I said, after I worked him so hard this weekend. But, yeah, there you go. That's the result. That is the net result of what we've got, because, you know, it doesn't look good. And I don't think what I don't like is the elongation of that white spot, because if it was just a light on back, it would tone down to a spot, a circlish spot, but it's not. That is up and down slit, and that's what I see.
I'll just let everybody make up their mind on for themselves on that one. I just find it an unusual anomaly. But
yeah.
I can tell you, I can you know, and I know you guys, like I was just talking about the lady that what I saw, and there's just things out there we can't explain, and I'm not saying that every one of them are possessed. I'm not saying this is like, I'm just saying that.
No, but there are some that are.
Yeah.
I don't think everyone is, but I think there's
right.
some occasionally that are.
Because, you can't explain. It doesn't add up. I mean, how do you get away with all that? How do you do this? How do you relish those acts? I mean, somebody completely, and I know there's really, really intelligent, insane people, but how do you kill 40 or 50 people and just throw, I mean, it's just, it took him over. That's what he lived for. That was his purpose, for lack of a better term. That was Bundy's purpose. Or he felt.
Yes, it certainly was. That poor young girl. And she only knew what was going to happen to her. That's right.
And how do you, I mean, if you're not, I mean, murderers, you have to be able to commit murders anyways, you know. But to pick up a 12-year-old girl, take her, beat her, rape her, I don't know that he cut her head off more than, you know, I didn't look at that one real, heavy. But I think that was the last murder that he committed, maybe. That or the sorority girls. I think they all were in Florida. All those were in Florida.
I believe it was the 12-year-old girl. It was the last one, if I'm not mistaken.
And I mean, what kind of how do you do that? I mean, you have to be evil. I mean, there's something possessing your hind end for you to do things like that. Something, the depravity of that. There's no logic, whatsoever.
That is absolutely right, Tony. Well, I want to thank my esteemed panel for another successful and wonderful Murder 123. We've had a blast. I appreciate you being here. We'll see you next week. And I will do the quick call around to discuss a few upcoming things with my esteemed panel. And so we'll see you next week. We'll figure out who we're going to put on the firing line. That's some old TV show, isn't it? William F. Buckley.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see who we're going to put on the firing line next week. Probably somebody that committed a few. Might talk about H.H. Holmes and the house on Haunted Hill. Some interesting things. So we'll see you next week. Robin, goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
See you,
take
guys.
Care.
See you, John.
Bye.
See you, Robin.
Oh, and good luck to you.
Bye.
Snakes. Tony, you take care. Be good. Bye-bye.